You're listening to a podcast by the VIN News Service, an independent advertising-free source for veterinary news. My name is Dr. Wendy Smith Wilson. Today, you'll hear journalist Jennifer Fiala round up articles that VIN News published in June, highlighting several written by fellow reporter Ross Kelly, who recently covered the Federal Trade Commission's crackdown on acquisitions by corporate consolidators and the devastating decline of South Asia's vulture population. The articles, titled NVA Expansion in U.S. Hits Antitrust Snag, Regulator Orders NVA to Sell Still More Veterinary Hospitals, and Growing List of Animal Painkillers Poisoning Vultures, can be found online at news.vin.com.
Welcome, Ross. It seems the Federal Trade Commission has turned the world of veterinary consolidation on its head in two recent actions you have covered very closely. You write a lot about business and regulation for VIN News, so I'd like to get your thoughts on the significance of the FTC's move to block National Veterinary Associates, a large consolidator, from acquiring two smaller chains of specialty practices, Sage Veterinary Centers and Ethos Veterinary Health. But first, for our listeners, explain the concept of veterinary consolidation and tell me why these particular players have caught the FTC's attention. It's my understanding that JAB, which owns National Veterinary Associates, is the world's third largest consolidator. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Yes, so National Veterinary Associates, which is owned by the German private equity company JAB, owns about 1,400 veterinary practices around the world, which does make it the third biggest consolidator, the biggest being Mars, of course, and the second biggest being the British company IVC Evidencia. But what really caught the regulator, the Federal Trade Commission's attention in this instance, is that National Veterinary Associates was, JAB slash National Veterinary Associates was trying to buy companies that own specialty and emergency practices, which are different from just your ordinary general practice clinic. They perform a wider range of medical, operations, and they tend to be larger too. You know, Sage and Ethos, the two companies that were involved in this intervention, each employ hundreds of veterinarians. So even though they're kind of small, they weren't that small. And, you know, the prices paid were like over $1 billion for each one. So we're well over $2.5 billion worth of acquisitions here that the Federal Trade Commission's intervened in. So that specialty and emergency practice space is a particular concern to the FTC. And one consultancy, Brackey Consultants based in Chicago, they estimate that in the United States, when it comes to specialty and emergency practices, around 75%, so three quarters, are owned by corporate consolidators. Right, so it's probably of no huge surprise that the Federal Trade Commission took a look at both of those deals, both of which were announced last year, but it took the commission a little bit of time to assess the impact on competition.
Right.
And then, of course, you had these two decisions that came, 16 days apart.
Right. So I did note two really interesting and new, never-before-seen restrictions that the FTC imposed. And from your article, it seems that JAB must now get the FTC's approval before buying another practice within 24 miles of one it already owns in California and Texas, and that they must notify the FTC before doing anything like that elsewhere in the country. Is it fair to say that this is not happened to another consolidator in the veterinary space, that this is a new restriction?
Yeah, I mean, this, from what I can see, this certainly looks new. I mean, I don't know, maybe at least in the recent past, the Federal Trade Commission has intervened in veterinary mergers before, the first time being in 2017 when Mars bought NVA. The FTC forced Mars to sell 12 specialty and emergency clinics to get that deal over the line. Also, a second time in 2020 when National Veterinary Associates merged with Compassion First, JAB, the ultimate owner, had to sell three specialty and emergency practices. But as you point out, in this instance, it's different because the Federal Trade Commission has added these extra restrictions on JAB/NVA, which forces them to give them prior notice if they want to buy clinics. There was a political element to this. The Federal Trade Commission has a majority of Democrats on it now than Republicans, so it's 3-2, and the chairperson of the FTC is a Democrat. So they expressed, what the Republicans probably thought as a slightly more anti-business, anti-private equity kind of sentiment in the decision that they made. The Republicans argued that, by the way, the Republican members agreed that these practices would have to be divested and sold to get these deals over the line, but they argued that the competition or the lessening of competition was only present in specific geographic locations. Whereas the Democrats have imposed these extra restrictions because they're looking at it from a nationwide perspective.
Now, is this because the FTC, as you've reported, thinks that they're not getting notified or it's hard to know of the deals being made by private firms? You know, in other words, they just don't know how many practices are being bought and sold when it doesn't need to be reported.
If you're a publicly listed company, right? So I'm just trying to think of a publicly listed company like Coca-Cola, for example, or something like that. If you want to acquire businesses, you have to tell your shareholders and you have to disclose it publicly. And like the level of detail that's required in that disclosure often has to do with the size of the dollar value of the acquisition. But if you're a private company that's not listed on the stock exchange, you don't have to tell everyone exactly what you're doing and exactly what companies you're buying. Consultants estimate that somewhere between 800 and 1,000 general veterinary practices were acquired by corporate consolidators in the US last year alone. So, you know, almost 1,000 practices were snapped up. And they don't even know, a lot of the consultancies don't even know the precise number. And they're just looking at websites and making phone calls to try and figure out, you know, exactly how many practices are being acquired. And when you consider that the Federal Trade Commission's job is to make sure that there's enough competition in a market to stop, you know, one particular company having so much power that it could start raising prices or the quality of its service could go down unchecked, then it's understandable that the competition regulator would want to know what's happening.
Right. Reading your article, I came across the comment from Brian Jaffe, the managing director at Cascadia Capital, an investment bank in Seattle. And it put the issue in context for me. He noted that industry consolidation has become so prolific, independent veterinary clinics no longer can prevent corporate acquisitions from being anti-competitive. And he noted that all signs that more merger scrutiny is coming, you know, is coming to reality. So do you feel like a crackdown on the entire U.S. veterinary industry truly is forthcoming? And will this put the brakes on consolidation?
Well, let's take a look, because time will tell. So the two deals that were just, they weren't blocked by the regulator. They forced a few practices to be sold to get the deals over the line. As I mentioned before, we're in that emergency and specialty practice space, which is around about 75% owned by corporate consolidators already. When you go to the general practice space, it's more like 25%. Mm-hmm. So it's the opposite, it's the flip side. Like there's still 3/4 of the practices are owned by independents. But, and a big but there is that of those 25% of practices that are owned by corporate consolidators, they tend to be the larger practices. So if you look at the total revenue that is being generated in the US veterinary sector, it's more like close to 50%, maybe just under 50% by Brachy Consulting's reckoning, is controlled by corporate consolidators. So almost half. And if you look at the United Kingdom, where there's a similar level of concentration, so, you know, close to 50%, their competition regulator has just intervened in two deals there as well. But those deals were for general practice, acquisitions involving general practice. So, you know, two different countries, two different regulators. So it's not necessarily the case they'll do the same thing. But the signs are there that there could be more regulatory scrutiny across the entire veterinary sector. And as Brian Jeffy was noting, there was a time where whenever there was an acquisition, a consolidator could say, look, you know, if you're a pet owner, all you have to do is go down the road and you're going to find an independent practice somewhere. So there's still competition there. But now maybe it's not going to be so easy for a pet owner to find an independent practice close by. And that kind of raises that idea of the importance of having practices nearby for emergency care in particular. And it's kind of interesting that the regulators focused on the emergency sector on that point too. I mean, if you're in an emergency, you're going to want to have something reasonably close by and you want to have some choice there.
Right. I did find this curious from your reporting that the FTC's divestiture orders, they order the sale of these hospitals to Florida-based United Veterinary Care. And I wondered how that happened. Was there some kind of competitive bidding process? How did United Veterinary Care get involved in purchasing these divested practices?
That's a great question. And it's one that we at the VIN News Service are going to be looking into a little bit more closely. So watch this space. Exactly how that process works, I must admit, I don't absolutely know. I mean, obviously, one of the considerations the regulator would give is how big this other company is. And United Veterinary Care own, I think, according to their website, last time I looked, it's 109 practices in the US. So they're pretty big, but they're not as big as a 1,400 National Veterinary Associates. So that's something the regulator would have factored in. Who gets to buy those divested practices, whether or not there's a competitive bidding process, whether or not, you know, the sale price would have had to have been reasonably similar to what NVA had to pay in the first place. That's something we'd like to look into in a bit more detail.
Well, thank you for that. We'll be looking for that update. I also want to go over another article that you reported on in June, and that was titled Growing List of Animal Painkillers Poisoning Vultures. Please tell me about how you came across that story and what that's about.
Well, this story has been happening for a little while in the sense that the world's vulture population has been, particularly in some parts of the world, absolutely devastated by being poisoned by painkillers that are used by veterinarians to treat cattle. So as we all know, vultures, you know, circle around and swoop and feed on dead animals. But if these dead animals had previously been injected with, you know, garden variety painkillers, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory painkillers is a particular class of drugs that's the problem, and that includes things like, you know, ibuprofen, like Advil, right? Mm. The one problem one, though, which was identified in India about 20 years ago, actually by US veterinarian Dr. Lindsay Oakes, was diclofenac, which is found in Voltaren. But it's also used to treat pain in cattle, injected into cattle. So what would happen is the veterinarians would inject the diclofenac into the cattle would die. Because we're talking about India, which is a country where cows are revered and have, you know, significance, religious significance, the people don't really eat them. So basically the vultures would clear away the cattle carcasses. But because the cattle aren't getting cleared away by the vultures now, it's causing a problem for the people because dogs are feeding on the carcasses, rats are feeding on the carcasses, and they're spreading rabies and other diseases. So it's actually, there's a big One Health element to what's happening. Now, India is an important country for this because a lot of the particular species of vulture that are affected by these toxicants, are in the Indian subcontinent, but there's also some in Europe and in Africa. Other species of vultures, some other species, fortunately, aren't as sensitive, and that includes species of vulture in the United States. So condors or turkey vultures, for example, so far haven't been found to be sensitive to these toxicants. But in India and other places where vultures are sensitive to them, unfortunately, we're finding that veterinarians are discovering that there's other painkillers that are poisonous to vultures too. Now, diclofenac was banned in India in 2006. 2006. But it's still being used illegally there, unfortunately. And now you have these new drugs, and I'll just read them out so people are aware of what they are. Flunixin, ketoprofen, aceclofenac, nimesulide have all recently been discovered as also veterinary painkillers that are also poisonous to vultures. Fortunately, there's alternative drugs out there, painkillers that veterinarians can use that aren't toxic to these vultures, meloxicam being the main one. They've discovered a few other ones recently, including paracetamol, which is safe to use. But the numbers of vultures in India, as an by way of example, have fallen something like 99% as a result of this poisoning crisis. Some of them are being bred in captivity and are gradually being released into the wild. But the biologists and the veterinarians who are doing that are worried about releasing them back into the wild because those drugs are still out there. There's a lot of education efforts going on to try and get the veterinary community to start using painkillers that are less harmful to these animals.
Well, let's hope that education helps India's vulture population turn around. Thank you for that story. We love hearing about other topics going on in the world, and we were really looking forward to that next FTC article that you're writing. Thank you very much for joining us, Ross.
Thanks, Jen. It was a pleasure.
Bye.
You've been listening to a podcast by the VIN News Service, a division of the Veterinary Information Network, the world's leading online veterinary community. Music was composed by Benjamin Olson. This recording is copyright VIN 2022.